So in dissemination, Jacques Derrida states that we cannot tamper with the form of the book without disturbing everything else. And digital writing, which is what I've been concentrating on, it has been amply shown, tempers with both the form of the narrative and that of the book. The central metaphor of the digital, that of the World Wide Web, points to a connective fabric which overemphasizes the ideas of a structure made of thread, or overemphasizes also the idea of a unique space, as you were saying 2 minutes ago, a space made of water, a unique space. But the web is less a cobweb or a sea than it is disjointed clusters, basically. Cracks, fragments, and that's what I intend to be talking about. It's punctured and an open space. It's made of strings of data. If you go down one series of code, it's strings of data written as executable code, which generate hyperlinks, images and text or sound, which might in turn make up things like tweets, which are obviously little fragments, or databases, as Ariane has shown, like the databases are also fragments. So the very structure of the data means that it circulates as discrete units of zeros and ones, at least up to now, until we turn to quantum computers. In other words, as fragments. And my first question is, how do you reconcile these fragments with a form of narrative or with a form of narrative? And my first answer is not really an answer. This was what Epson Artsev said about a game, about the video game, show me a medium that's not suited to storytelling, it's probably a completely useless one. So this was just as a kind of paratext to what I wanted to say. And digitally born stories either dwell in that fragmented web or reconstruct their own self-contained network system, their very own system of fragments. Digital artists will refer to them as patchworks, clusters of intensities, constellations, or islands. I'm just going to take a couple of examples before moving on to what I want to be saying. Shelly Jackson's work that most of you might know, Patchwork Girl and My Body, explicitly play with the idea of disjointed frames, lexias, and body parts, all three being linked in her work. For her, hypertext, like the body, has no points to make, only clusters of intensities, and that's what I'm going to be interested in, the clusters of intensities. From a different perspective, and because I'm in Canada, because she's here, I wanted to quote a Canadian artist. So JR stages clusters of intensities in all of her works, but I'm here just quoting a little piece from, and by islands, I mean paragraph. So in that work, to quote her, the reader has to navigate in a sea dotted with islands. And by islands, she means computer-generated paragraphs. So her island paragraphs are made up of, I'm quoting her again, fragments of text harvested from a larger literary corpus. She's navigating her sea. One can encounter several islands, several versions of the same island, and one of them might read, and I'm just taking the first lines, two possible computer-generated lines, my island, a little world within itself, or my island didn't seem like one, but who decides? I'm letting that sit for a moment because both are interesting to me as one cannot decide what it is and the fact that it's a world within itself. Shelly Jackson's Patchwork Girl each island bears the trace of the other islands also. Or to follow her narrative voice, that's one of the passages, it's just a screen capture, it's absolutely horrible, but what I'm quoting is down here. So I'm sorry for the poor quality of my screen grab, it's much better in when you let it run. I had nightmares of other islands stretching away from mine, and that's what I'm really interested in, is the idea of, I'm interested in the idea of stretching away from something, away from the island, these self-contained clusters that can be stretching away. I'm taking another example before moving on. And the example I want to take is Stephanie Strickland's and Cynthia Lawson Jaramillo's The Universe, in which the fragments take the form of constellations. I'm going to show it this perhaps. I'm showing you more, I'm coming back, this is what I wanted to show. It takes the form of something like that. So as the author explained, though not identical with astronomical or astrological constellations, the diagram that appear in response to a sweeping or swinging movement of the hand across the screen are spontaneously read by the readers as constellations. And we call them that in our instruction test. That was a quote from Stephanie Strickland. So constellations, such as this one, are neither islands nor fragments. And the idea of constellations that we would have at first glance would be more of clusters or links than severed links. Yet, Stephanie Strickland's constellations open up a space of possibilities, and they have a potential for dispersion that I'll be talking about. So sense, in her words, become unanchored and can only coalesce in the reading gesture. The reading gesture could be a click, a mouse over, a movement of a hand on the tactile screen. This is what makes meaning coalesce. And as with print, reading is what generates meaning. Navigating a page necessitates weaving a sewing sense. This is also the way Patchwork Girl, for instance, is going to talk about it in a lexia called Graveyard. It's one of the pages she might be saying, if you want to see the whole, you will have to sew me together yourself. Well, I find these metaphors slightly problematic in the sense that we seem to be looping back on the idea of text as textile, as the material of sense, which is, in a way, if we take Jean-Luc Nancy's very long quote, that's why I put it up there, is going to be slightly problematic because we're looping back on the same things as we were before, meaning sense as such has no material, no fiber or consistency, no grain or thickness. Sense as such consists precisely in nothing other than weaving together an as such. For example, I say a flower, and now the flower as such, that is, as nothing presentable, absent from every bouquet, from every garden of a botanical book, begins to link such to such, relating endlessly to itself as its own sense or idea, which never has done with linking itself to itself, all the better to let loose or unwind its parcels of silky fiber, while also spinning out its sense or its indefinite metaphor. So all the metaphors of the web seem to be looping back on the material of sense, but only allow the traditional metaphor of hypertext as linking itself to itself, as one lexia linking to another lexia, and doesn't allow to really look at the way fragments might question or affect our narratives. And to come back to the text from Derrida I quoted at the beginning, dissemination, in his introduction, he says that the texts are assembled otherwise, and that the fact that it's assembled otherwise questions, the question that is astir precisely is that of presentation. The digital, in my opinion, raises the same question of presentation and of the aesthetics of fragments, of stories being read and written in fragments or constellations. I'll come back, I'm making a distinction between constellation and fragments that I'll come back on afterwards. And to start to address this question, I'll start with a print book. Percival Everett's The Water Cure. This is also where I got the quote in my title from. And if I chose a print novel, it's because I don't want to be suggesting that fragments exist only in the digital. Fragments also obviously exist in print novels. They just have maybe a different thrust in print than they have in the digital. In The Water Cure, the fragments of the narrative structure arise for a very different reason. It's because the narrator is traumatized, so it's a question of fragments arising from trauma and the way trauma is transmitted to language. So I'm just skipping super fast on that because the only thing that I'm really interested in is that quote. Fragments. This work is not fragmented, it's fragments. So all sections are fragments except for this one because it lives here in the spot among fragments and has a specified job concerning those fragments surrounding it. A fragment, connective tissue, the story itself. oh, the story itself, that ever thickening center. So what I found interesting in that full quote, which would have been way too long for my title, is that he is opposing, he's setting apart fragmentation and fragments, and he seems to be defining fragments as a form of writing, and not a shattered piece to be rebuilt, not something that you need to rebuild, not something that is shattered, not something that is disjointed, but something that is there as such. And it also inverts the traditional take on fragments by juxtaposing the three questions, a fragment, a connective tissue, or the story itself, which seems to suggest that fragments are connective tissues, like fragments are the story itself. So after this very long contextualization, what I'm interested in and what I want to look at is digital fragments from three perspectives. First, how constellation and fragments entail an unanchoring and grazing. I'll come back to that idea, grazing bouté. So I'm moving from the sea metaphors to a more agricultural metaphor, perhaps. And then by examining how fragments can be seen as a transformation principle, and I'll conclude with the idea of Lyotard's floating space. I hope it will come clear by that time. So in this course figure, Jean-François Lyotard defines a good book as a book to be grazed, un livre à bouter. That is one where the reader could dip in anywhere in any order. And that's the full quote. A good book, in order to give free rein to truth in its aberration, would be a book where linguistic time, the time in which signification evolves, the time of reading, would itself be deconstructed. A book the reader could dip into anywhere in any order, a book to be grazed. What I found interesting, and the reason why I'm going back to Lyotard, even though it's not very recent, because this course figure was published fairly a long time ago, is that his comparison stems with, this one stems from the visual, from paintings, and all of his comparisons that I'm going to be using, because also what has been said, the links between image and text in digital literature seem to be very relevant to me. So this comparison stems from paintings and Paul Klee's remark that paintings have to be grazed and not read. So though he's obviously here referring to print and to paintings, I think that the lack of order and deconstructed time of reading and viewing is arguably perhaps the main effect of digital writing. The digital has a plastic power that not all written texts have. I'm not talking about artists' books here, but I'm talking about text as text. And the digital seems almost better suited to appeal to the eye. That would be a Lyotard's formulation. So perhaps even more so than print works, the energy of electronic literature lies in the deconstructed order of viewing as reading, or of reading and viewing. So is reading viewing? Is viewing reading? That's something that would necessitate a whole 2 hours, perhaps, of discussing. But that is definitely something you need to consider, and perhaps also listening needs to be placed into that equation when we're looking at listening, reading, digital literature. So to quote Shelley Jackson again in Stitch Bitch, hypertext doesn't know where it's going. It has no through line. One cluster is as central as another, which is to say, not at all. What sometimes substitutes for a center is just a switch point, a place from which everything diverges, a Cheshire aftercat. I particularly like the image of the Cheshire cat, perhaps for personal reasons, but also that in the Water Cure, that from which I took the quote from my title, there's also a link of fragments and Cheshire cats. It's with the Cheshire cat that Everett is questioning direction. It's one that I particularly find funny and interesting. The cat tells me I may take this road or that one, that either will get me to a place to which I will be going. The March Hare is that way, the Hatter the other. My direction matters little. They are both mad. And the cat, he fades back in. So what happens then when direction matters little, when everything is mad? Well, what is unveiled first is the dynamics of unanchored fragments of intensities and clusters of sense, and then perhaps an oscillation and the energy of a fleeting cat, a fleeting Cheshire cat-like gesture. So the screen grab I showed about the universe exemplifies a tension between trying to chart constellations and drifting in an open space. What you have to imagine is this is not a this is a static grab, but what you would do is you would take your mouse or your finger across one, and suddenly a diagram appears, then a title, then the number, and slowly the text appears. So at first you are basically lost in that work, and suddenly it comes into focus, and it disappears again as soon as you make a movement. So it's really something that's very ephemeral. And the reason I'm taking this example, perhaps more than your islands, though I think your islands work in the same way, is that in the sense of the world, Jean-Luc Nancy is reflecting on the relation of space to constellations. And he's speaking about a world wandering from one end to another, a universe that drifts along on its own momentum, which leads to an unanchoring of sense. And I'm quoting him. It is as if all of its senses were proposed to us by means of a monstrous physics of inertia, where a single motive were propagating itself in all senses and direction at once. And I think that these types of poem stage a type of cosmic wandering which calls for dispersion, switch points, and divergences. Albeit from a different perspective, your poem, and by island I mean paragraph, does that when it refers to the what I quoted at the beginning, other islands stretching away from mine. So everything stretches. It's more of a question of not of reading sense, but of letting it stretch away. So every single point, so being a word, a line, or a paragraph, stretches signification away and proposes divergences. For Nancy, the entire matter of sense has to do with the fact that it's proposed to us in this way. That is, I'm quoting him, not given, but proposed. He puts he puts in two words. Proposed, offered, reach out towards us from afar, from a distance that may be infinite. So Strickland's sparkling constellation, and if I chose this particular one, which we can actually come back to because we can. I said it was fleeting, ephemeral, that you never come back to it, but I'm biasing it a little bit because you can actually type 219 up here where the mouse is, you can type it up here, and you can get it back. But it's still sparkling. And these sparkling constellations have a plastic power of sense proposed from afar, sense as constellation. Sense is an opening, not a given, as I think with all electronic literature. I'm not suggesting here that print doesn't achieve this opening, it does, but only that the thrust of electronic literature is the thrust of plastic fragments and constellations. And to read her creating or leaving a structure more and more open of sparkling points. The sparkling is another staple of the digital. It's regenerated text, erased text, fleeting forms. And it's a disturbance, and that's where my Cheshire Cat comes back. It's a gesture that requires reading, grazing, and grazing something that is sparkling and escaping all the time. So contrary to a fixed painting, which you could take your time to graze, the diagrams disappear as soon as they are traced. They are twinkling, fading forms that collapse times and fragments. And I'd like to move on to this idea of collapsing time and fragments, which, 5 minutes? Okay. Which Lyotard has an analysis of Butor's work, Illustrations, which speaks about collapsing times and fragments. Butor's work are fragments scattered across several pages, which are, in a way, the same way as you can have in digital lit, when you have fragments scattered across several screens and extending beyond the interface, JR was speaking of extending far beyond the horizon of the browser window, for instance. So it's the same idea. And in both cases, as Leterre remarks for Butor, the reader loses sight of the previous fragment's signification. So you lose time of signification by the time you have gone to the next fragment. So signification is lost from sight, but it's not destroyed. It pursues its subterranean course. It gives you an idea of déjà vu, and that's Lyotard also, grounded in the experience of the book's sensory space-time. And the sensory, I think, is the essential part. This, in a way, is also, he speaks of the idea of short circuits of signification and flashes of meanings. I'm compressing a bit what I wanted to say, but it's also what Shelley Jackson says when she says it catapults you from one spot to another. So, hyperlinks simultaneously open and collapse the space of the screen. They create short circuits of signification, which collapse the temporality of the work. And this is especially the case when you're speaking about remixed fragments. I'm just mentioning in passing very rapidly, but another poetry generator, which is called See and Spar Between by Stephanie Strickland and Nick Montfort. It mixes up fragments of Emily Dickinson and of Moby Dick, and it collapses three temporalities, basically. The temporality of their work, the temporality of the digital work by Stephanie Strickland and Nick Montfort, and the two temporalities of the other works. So it's several archaeological layers at the same time, several short circuits of significations. So what gives the ordinary text a plastic power that ordinary signification does not allow to convey is precisely this textual fragmentation, this recombination of fragments in new configuration, this juxtaposing, this juxtaposition of incompatible contents. The idea of incompatible contents, for me, is also something that needs to be developed much more than in the time that I've given. But to go back to the idea of intensities and something in the Cheshire Cat. This is the first one is the beginning of the water cure. It's just one line, and it's asking us to induce all the rest. And throughout the book, you have several strokes, and they come into focus at the end as the Cheshire Cat. So every line holds the entire picture, is what he says. Every fragment holds the entire story, as far as I'm concerned. So to go to my concluding remarks, what are we to induce? So we induce when grazing a possibly fleeting hypertextual fragment. And I'm going to another water metaphor, that of the floating space which Lyotard develops. The floating space that he develops is, I'm quoting him, at once stiff and flexible, forcing the eye to interact with the page in a new way. And his he takes floating in the literal sense. He's speaking of logs of wood on the sea of the lakes in Scandinavia, meaning groups whose length and width are invariable, but that hug the undulations of water surface and therefore fluctuate in height or depth. So you have to imagine these logs moving onto the sea, and that's what he takes his floating space from. So it's both rigid and moving, bound and floating. And the idea is that, what I found particularly interesting in that idea is that it's two intertwined spaces. It's a space that's rigid and bound and floating and flexible at the same time. And digital writing maybe doesn't take a jet ski, but it floats and is bound at the same time. And the dynamics of mashups and any found text that you can find by poets has this double dynamics of something that is anchored in the poetics of other texts and that floats at the same time in a new space in which creates computer-generated text. So the reading gesture in that sense is what would create the floating space. It's haptic and it's plastic. And to come back to See and Spar Between, See and Spar Between is a computer-generated program that runs and runs and runs and runs and would never stop if you don't click on the space bar. So what allows you to grasp it and to what they call harpoon a stanza is to actually click. So the text is performed by the computer, it's performed by the reader, but the performance is random, and not two readings, even by the same reader, are going to be the same. There will never be the same output. And in that way, randomness is a transformation principle. And because this is the bilingual symposium, my next quote is going to be in French. Lyotard, on his book in Duchamp, equates performing to transforming. So the idea that it's the complex transformation, it's a machine of metamorphosis, and it's a redistribution of energies, and that's what I found most interesting. It's the idea of redistributing energies, transforming and redistributing energies. So reading fragments redistribute, well, the energy of digital fragments. It performs and transforms the narrative. Thank you.